WMIS-FM, The River, 92.1, Black Duck Bemidji.
I still can't even hardly believe my ears when you even tell me this.
Translator K237FJ, 95.3, Thief River Falls, and W300BP, 107.9, Grand Rapids.
Now this I love.
Northern Minnesota's rock station. It's time for the Tom Ceratori Show on the Beaver Radio Network.
That's McLaughlin shoots, scores! Kyle Lowe from the high slot! Took the pass on a backhand from Owen Cylinder. He beats Driscoll.
Every Wednesday night, get all the info you need to know about the next game.
Launch went ahead looking for Vaisanen. It was deflected by Northern Michigan. Vaisanen goes and tracks it down. He'll leave it now for Owen Cylinder. Back up top it comes. Brad Johnson with a shot. He scores! It was deflected out in front. Deflected, I believe, by Austin Jopy.
Get the insight from the man behind the bench. He's played here. He's coached here. He and Bob Peters are Beaver Hockey. The Tom Ceratori Show, live at the Tavern on the South Shore, on the radio home for Beaver Hockey since day one of the Division I era. We are the Beaver Radio Network.
Good evening and welcome to the Tavern on South Shore for the Tom Ceratori Show here on the Beaver Radio Network. Beaver men swept Northern Michigan last weekend, opening up CCHA play at home this weekend against the Bowling Green Falcons. Coach, congrats on a pair of wins.
Thanks, Schultzy. Great intro, by the way.
We try.
I like it. I like it, bud. We'll see after a couple wins. That was not.
Well, it helps when you can get a game winner by a guy who hasn't played a ton, Austin Jopy, yeah, with the game winner last Saturday night. But you go on your first real road trip. They're different than the home-and-home road trips to Duluth and North Dakota. How'd your guys respond with all the extra stuff that goes into a road trip?
No, I think that obviously, again, you know, the wins aside, I thought they responded well. We had great food on the trip. That's one thing you always look at, too. We had great food from the Northern Michigan University Dining Service, our pregame meals, our postgame meals, did an unbelievable job. It was a great trip for the guys, and the weather was good, and you know, we won some games, so it's all thumbs up, Schultzy.
You had to come from behind on Saturday. You're down 2-0. You got a guy making his first career start. We'll have our player profile on Matias Scholl a little later on, but just how do you think he responded from being down 2-0?
Well, I thought you talking Matias?
Yes.
Oh, I thought he responded well. I mean, it was a snowstorm. He had nothing to do with any of that. I mean, the ice was tilted. If we weren't a veteran team, we would have lost that game by a touchdown. And that was something, you know, Matias, again, I thought, again, he played very well, and there's a couple goals he couldn't do. I mean, that has nothing to do with goaltending. That was just a one-sided affair for 18 minutes. So.
And yet, in the last couple of minutes of that first period, you guys tie it up.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird.
This game was funny.
It's really funny. And once we got that first goal, when Alex Iarullo got that first goal, I said, you know what? For a horrible period, but you knew they were going to come out. I didn't necessarily think it was going to be, you know, so one-sided that first period. But obviously, we knew that they were going to have a lot of snarl. They were going to have a lot of jump. There was going to be a lot of, you know, passion in their game, a lot of desperation in their game, which there was. And we just didn't respond very well. And you think that a veteran team would, but in saying that, we responded by getting a goal at the right time with Alex Iarullo, a big-time goal. And I would have been happy as heck going into the locker room down 2-1 and saying, you know what, after a butt-kicking like that, we're only down a goal. You know what, thank our lucky stars and let's get moving. And then we get that second one, which was just a heavy goal by Tyler Kirkup. And, again, the whole complexion of the game changed.
Well, every game's been one-goal game so far, Tom, other than that UMD game, which it was a one-goal game.
It is a one-goal game.
Yeah, with the empty net goal. So, I mean, that's kind of indicative of Division I college hockey. Most nights it's going to come down to a goal. You just got to find a way to be on the right side of it.
It's just one play here, one play there. That's our level. I told our guys today, I go, I think we've got the most parity of any hockey league in the world. I'm talking parity, not saying the best, parity. When you talk 1 to 60, like the 40th team can easily knock off the number 1 or 2 team. You know, and it's not a – it's not a fluke. Other sports, it's a fluke. And that's our sport. And you guys hear me say this year in and year out, but, I mean, there's just it's an eyelash difference. It's a play here and a play there. And we've had 6-1 goal games, and we're probably going to have, I don't know,
26 more.
Exactly. 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 So it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. Always has been, always will be.
Well, special teams definitely was a factor in that Friday game. Your team doesn't give up many power play goals, but three. What kind of adjustments did you have to make on your power or your penalty kill?
We just had it up ice. They did a good job on the rush, and we had to get out of our box and go into a 1-3. They had some good double. They did a good job double driving their guys, and their high layer on zone entries were open, and we just were a little soft on the big ice, and we had to make some adjustments. But they got a heck of a power play. They got good team speed. And, I think we only gave up 6 power play goals all last year. We've already given up 6 this year, but that's what, you know, those things happen at times, but we got to rectify that problem.
For the casual fan who's listening here, take them under the hood here. Double drive with speed is hard to defend.
Yes.
Why?
Well, if you're not ready for it, it sure is, but if you're ready for it, it's really not. You just have to have your both defensemen have to take both drive guys going to the net. And then the puck carrier, which we call the high layer guy, our one forward penalty killer takes them, and our weak side penalty killer takes the pass on the high layer. So there's a way of defending it. We just didn't defend it very well in the first one, but we were caught off guard too. So that was good execution on their part.
Well, on the flip side, you got 9 goals on the weekend. Anytime you get that, it usually results in wins.
Yeah, but you're right. And obviously we got 9 goals. We got. We got 13 goals in our last 3 games. We've got 16 in our last 4 games. We're averaging 4 goals a game. But we're not going to sustain this. You can't be giving up. We're giving up the same. And, if you want to win championships, you want to get to the NCAA tournament, you want to do all those things that we're talking about, you got to be a top 15 in the country offensively. 11 of the 16 teams were top 15 in the country last year defensively. Everybody who won their conference championship, won their playoff championship, were top 15 in the country defensively. You have to be good defensively, and that's one area of our game that we got to be a little better. We got to be a little more committed right there, and because you cannot sustain 4 goals a game.
Well, what do you attribute that to? I mean, you guys have traditionally in last year, I mean, pretty solid lift defensively. It's early in the season. You
6 power play goals doesn't help.
Well, exactly. That's more special teams than defense, right?
We're a little loose right now. Our back pressure's not great, which we've addressed that. We're not keeping the puck on one half of the rink like we typically do. Most teams do that. You know, we're not doing that. So we're giving the end wall up. We're getting pucks to they're getting pucks to the weak side. So we're a little loose. Again, it's not like it's a major league catastrophe, but it needs to be addressed, and you need to realize that you can't be giving up more than 2 goals a game. You can't. And once you do, life can get really dicey. And if you're relying on getting 4 a game, there's only about 2 or 3 teams in the country that average 4 goals a game. There's only about 15 more that average 3 goals a game. So, law of averages will tell you that you're not going to sustain that, and you're going to be. In rough shape if you continue to give up 3 and 4.
Well, you got some great play out of your goaltender Scholl, and then you get the game-winning goal on Saturday by another freshman. Tom, are you happy where your rookies, your incoming freshmen, are at this point?
Yeah, I think so. Again, we don't ever have a ton of expectations for them, Kelly, so it doesn't really matter. We just want them getting better. We got to play some of them. We want them to get better. Getting more comfortable, and that the biggest thing is working hard and making sure they have good habits. I mean, that's how you start. But we never have expectations for them. So yeah, I'm fine with where they're at. Absolutely.
Well, goaltending obviously was the question going into the season, and with the Zach obviously head to North Dakota. Where are you at with that?
Right now, again, it's just work in progress. Yes. Again, Matias Scholl went on the trip this past weekend because Gavin Enright had a pulled groin. Then Matias Scholl gets the call, and look what happens.
CCHA goalie of the week.
Yep.
He answers the bell.
And that's how you create competition, controversy, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm.
In that position, isn't competition the most important factor?
Well, I'd rather have one just that you could give the ball to, but conversely, if there's competition when – if guys probably aren't getting it done. That, you know what I mean? So I don't need to have three guys battling. But I'd love to have somebody step to the plate. That's for sure.
Well, and wasn't that, I mean, Matias came in Friday night, correct? In relief to get the win, so
yeah,
to speak?
Yeah, he came in at the midpoint of the game and in very difficult circumstances and shut the door. I mean, he's the reason we won, period, on Friday.
Which was his first game, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he shut the door, wow. And he was outstanding.
I asked Alex Iarullo for Saturday's pregame. I said, I don't know how to ask you other than to be blunt. Do you play harder when that second goalie comes in, when that new guy comes in? And he goes, yeah, you probably do. Not even necessarily thinking about it. He goes, you're playing just as hard for the new guy as you are for the guy that just left. And I thought that was an interesting comment, that you're playing for the guy that just left, too. Mm-hmm. As a teammate, that's got to hurt you, though. You're seeing your goalie struggling. He just got pulled out of the game. I'm like, man, that makes sense. You're going to be playing hard for both guys.
It's weird. A lot of times, it plays out well when you pull a goalie for whatever reason. You know, not to say that the next time we do it, it will, but it does. It's amazing how that second. I think it's a testament to that goalie who goes in too. There's something, you know, whether that, you know, from an intensity standpoint, you know, competitive, whether they're dialed, how they're dialed in, whatever it might be. But a lot of times that's it's a situation. I think they might look, and here's me just spitballing, by the way. I just think that they look at it as it's a no-lose situation sometimes. I think there's sometimes they look at it that way, which is probably pretty good perspective.
Well, going into your first game in Division I college hockey in the middle of the game, maybe that is better when you're saying, well, what do we got to lose? We're already losing now. Versus, you know, all that hype of, you know, knowing I'm going to play tonight and all of that for your first experience might actually be beneficial.
It could, Biss. You're spot on, and none of us know, but it's just interesting, you know, philosophically. I'm not saying I'm right. It's just kind of – but nobody – none of us know. It's just one of those things you can – it's just beer talk.
I'm not even sure Matias knows.
No, you don't. Nobody – no, you just don't know.
Well, and you never know on what given day. I mean, even the best goaltender has an off day and gets pulled from the game.
Yeah.
At what point did you tell Matias he was starting Saturday?
Well, I think we all knew. I mean, I told him in the morning, but I don't think I think he knew, and I think you knew.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I did.
I mean, I mean, so.
I can't imagine, though, him trying to get a good night's sleep. There's got to be butterflies there.
I think he had a great night's sleep because he won the game for us. I think that's how you look at it. And now on Saturday we were playing with the house money. That's kind of how I looked at it, and I'm sure he did too a little bit. I don't know if he did, but
we'll find out in the pregame show on Friday as Matias will join us in our pregame player profile. The Beavers went and took two games, 6 points on the road at Northern Michigan last weekend. We'll host Bowling Green coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that plus. Kind of get the state of the game from Coach Cerutori's perspective. Where is college hockey now? Where to come from? What is good about where the game is right now? Maybe some things that are being talked about at the coaches' convention for future stuff. We'll talk about all that coming up here tonight. It's the Tom Cerutori Show from the Tavern on South Shore right here on the Beaver Radio Network.
The Huddle at the Tavern on the South Shore. The Huddle is the Beaver Radio Network on WMIS-FM, The River.
Great players know all about using energy wisely. Ottertail Power Company recognizes Bemidji State University Beavers men's and women's athletics for bringing its energy to the fans listening to live game coverage on the Beaver Radio Network. Teamwork and dedication have brought many rewards over the years. And Ottertail Power Company encourages you to keep the energy going, Beavers. Best wishes for a memorable season of Bemidji State University sports. Go Beavers!
Farming requires well-built equipment. Kubota equipment that's proven for over a century. Tractors that are adaptable and versatile. Hay tools backed by a 2-year warranty. Sidekick and RTV utility vehicles where durability and functionality meet speed. Productive wheeled and track skid steers for the most demanding projects. To see the full line of quality Kubota equipment, visit Acme Tools, Highways 2 and 71 North Bemidji, and ask for a free demo.
Think we're due for a good cold winter? Get the convenience of a remote start now at Detail Plus. Just the touch of a button with a remote car starter from Detail Plus. Call 444-7587 to schedule your installation today. Need glass repair? They can do that too from Chandler's Auto Glass. They work with all insurance companies and take care of that pesky paperwork. With any windshield replacement, you receive a free mini car detail. Visit online, detailplusbemidji.com, or call 444-PLUS.
For both in-warranty and out-of-warranty service on Apple products and computer repair, choose Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's certified Apple Service Center in Bemidji and now open in Grand Rapids. We can help with hardware or software problems, spill damage, screen replacement, virus removal, or the accessories you need. And we're open Monday through Friday from 7:30 until 5:30. For service on your Apple product or PC repair, come to Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's certified Apple Service Center in Bemidji and Grand Rapids.
The Green Mill in Bemidji is hiring. Multiple kitchen positions with line cooks starting at $15 minimum with no experience needed. Also hiring servers and banquet positions with full-time, part-time, and seasonal positions available to fit your schedule. Benefits include paid vacation, IRA match, meal discounts, and more. The Green Mill is an equal opportunity employer offering a great work atmosphere with friendly staff and management. Start your new career today and apply online at greenmill.com/careers or stop by the Green Mill in Bemidji for an application.
The Huddle at the Tavern on the South Shore. The Huddle is the Beaver Radio Network on WMIS-FM, The River.
Something wrong, something right, something you said.
Welcome back to the Tom Ceratori Show. Don't you ever the Tavern on South Shore every Wednesday night starting at 6. The first hour is devoted to Beaver men's hockey. The second hour, half hour, hour, whatever it happens to be. A kind of roaming topic throughout Beaver sports. This week it will be Beaver football. Brent Bolte will join us at 7 o'clock as they got a fabulous win on the road at Duluth on Saturday. Saturday might have been the best day, single day in Beaver sports history that I can remember.
It was absolutely big time.
The volleyball team got their first win of the season.
Yes, go Volleybeeves.
Women's hockey won, men's hockey won, football beat Duluth for the first time in Duluth since World War II.
Yeah.
That's the best day ever.
It was a Beaver weekend.
I had a buddy of mine, called me yesterday, and obviously he saw that stat too. He lives in the Twin Cities and didn't go here, but he asked me, how long has been our rivalry been with Duluth? Have we played every year in the last 100 years? That's where I'm getting at. You know,
not every year.
We were in the NIC together.
Not every year.
Yeah.
But most.
Yeah.
I think the first game was in the late 1920s, I think, was the first game that Duluth ever played Bemidji State. Goofy stat.
Well, I mean, first time in 80 years?
Yeah.
When you have an accomplishment like that,
neither school
to be on
was
show.
Called what it's currently called. That's how long it's been.
Yeah.
So politicians, you know, the president gives the State of the Union, the governor gives the State of the State address. We're going to have Coach Ceratori give his State of College Hockey address right now. From where college hockey was to where it is now, what do you like the best of where the game has gone?
Oh, boy, Schultz, that's a good question. I just think right now I like the parity in college hockey probably more than anything, and I think that's what puts us in a healthy state right now when I just think that, you know, number four seeds in the NCAA tournament are winning consistently over number ones. We said it earlier, like you could be 40th in the pairwise or 45th, and there's no easy game. So I think from a parity standpoint, our game is outstanding. It's tremendous, and it's great to have that kind of competition.
What got us there?
Oh, I don't know. I think part of it is the growth of hockey in our country. I think you take a look at these non-traditional areas, there's great hockey players all over the United States. I think that has a lot to do with it. There's a lot of Europeans coming over here right now. So I just think, again, that there's a pretty good player pool. And I think if you have a good player pool and a deep player pool, everybody benefits.
So you're looking at, 60 teams, give or take, and how many players per team? 25?
Yeah, basically. That's a good number to use, probably, best.
So 1,600? Is that? Oh, I should.
Why
be doing,
are you doing math? Doing
don't
math.
Do math, Biff.
Probably 1,500, 1,600, Biff.
Yeah. So that's how many players you know get the opportunity to play Division I college hockey, which seems to be a lot. That you'd think there'd be a little bit more of the haves and have-nots. I mean, you know, the North Dakotas and Gophers of the world, the BUs and BCs versus, you know, the teams that are more at the smaller level, so to speak. But it really hasn't played out that way.
Well, it has to a certain degree. I mean, it's not like the, you know, those programs aren't hurting. They're going to the NCAA tournament consistently. But it's not like it's other teams aren't benefiting, or it's cyclical with a lot of other teams. And you know, and are the games are tight. I mean, those teams are always going to be high on the food chain when you're getting first round draft picks and things like that.
When I first started watching college hockey was when we moved from LA to Goodhue, Minnesota, and I just didn't have a remote. I was the remote.
Yeah.
My dad said, "Hey, go change the channel." And channel 29 out of the Twin Cities aired some Gopher games back at the old Mariucci.
Yeah.
Rooftop antenna. I mean, no HDTV. Snowy picture. I'm like, what am I watching here? I just moved from L.A. before Wayne Gretzky got there.
Yeah.
Hockey was a swear word in California at the time. I'm like, what is this sport? And it seemed like every whistle, there's 10 guys around the goalie. The ref's got to come in, separate everybody. The game was slow. The game was just had too much dead time.
Right.
To me, that's the best thing that college hockey's done. Get rid of all that nonsense, and we drop the puck and we play again.
Yep.
Pace of game, speed of game. That's all helped, hasn't it?
Well, it has, but that's all, I think, all levels. It's consistent from the NHL down. I think the NHL dictates a lot of those rule changes, and then it comes to us and goes to junior hockey. And but those are all great. I agree, Schultze. And I think the speed of our game is outstanding. But the reason the speed of our game is outstanding because of the rule changes over the course of the last 15 to 20 years.
Is there anything in the game of hockey that needs to change?
No, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to potentially see more offense. How do you? But again, you know, the elephant in the room is how do you create more offense? I don't know. You know, do you have do you get a little radical and have bigger nets and you know some things like that? I don't know if we're ready for that. It's just like kind of tweaking baseball. It's hard to tweak something that's been around for obviously hundreds of years. So I don't know. I don't know what, without putting a lot of thought into it. I think there's a lot of stewards of our game that, you know, that are leaders in some of these things. And I think overall, sometimes things don't happen as fast as we'd like, but I think you have to be cautious of trying to change something too quick too. Sometimes when you do that, you might make mistakes.
Has the CCHA got any different rules than the WCHA had?
Well, no, we're all, you know, obviously by the NCAA, our rules are the same in college hockey.
How does a guy like Don Lucia, who is, I mean, he coached in Alaska, he coached in Colorado Springs, he coached in Minnesota. How does a guy like that, with his background, help the CCHA at the national level?
Well, I think there's a lot of things Don can do. One, he's got great credibility. One, he's got great insight on the game, not only as a coach, but also, administratively. He's seen so much. He's a smart guy. So I think he can have impact on the game just right there because of his knowledge. And now he's a steward for college hockey, and he's helping to make decisions and you know what's best for college hockey. So it's great to have people like that.
How far down the line are those commissioners looking at the game and how to help the game?
I don't know, are we talking
a couple of years? Yeah. Are we talking decades?
What's
their big picture?
Yeah, I don't know, Schultze. I mean, that's a tough question to answer is all I'm getting at, because I think so many things happen. You know, there's things in the forefront, and the things in the forefront are being discussed. And a lot of it's with the National Hockey League. You got to remember, we are a feeder program for the National Hockey League. And we have to look at certain – but all just because the NHL changes a rule doesn't mean we have to either, and we should. I always say, too, if that's the case, I mean, we have so many different things that are different than the NHL, so we don't have to be the same all the time. Look at our sheets. We have Olympic sheets. We've got hybrid sheets. We've got regulation sheets. We've got 10 feet from end wall to goal line. We got 12 feet. We got 15 feet. We've got 28-degree corners. We got 26-degree corners. We got 20. You know, I mean, like, our neutral zones are could be smaller. They could be larger. Like, our glass, some have seamless glass. Some have NHL glass. Some have glass with partitions. So we, just our rinks alone are different. So when you have all those things, you can't be identical to the National Hockey League. I mean, my Lord, we've got benches that are across from each other. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like, there's just a
every
lot of
time
things.
I go to the UP, I'm like, why did this ever happen?
Well, exactly. It's, you know, I watch this, you know, I think a lot of it is because a lot of it is your facilities. You want your facilities not behind. I think so. I don't know that. Notre Dame's is that way, too. But all I'm getting at is that, like, a lot of our rules, we want to be consistent at times with the NHL, but I don't think we can be consistent because we are different. But I think if it's something that's obviously really important, and if we feel that's better for the game, then we gotta implement it.
Well, I noticed a couple of protocols, not necessarily rule changes, but the game only nets, right? The CCHA requires that, where there's two nets sitting at the Sanford Center. They only are brought out when the game starts.
Right.
And then the referees have a mic where they're announcing the stuff now.
Yeah.
To the
and
crowd.
That's not standardized, Bishop. That's what you were asking earlier. That's not a standard, and you know, that's just leagues. Those are
right.
Things that are specific leagues that are doing. Those aren't like rules or anything like that. But we just felt that that's very professional, and we want to make sure too that, we're on the cutting edge of a lot of those things. I mean, you want to see those nice bright posts, and you want to see the white meshing in the nets. And I think it is great that the referees can converse with the fans basically and let them know exactly what's going on. Those are all things that are just, I think it brings the fans closer to the action.
Mm-hmm. What about the safety of the game? What have you seen that's good? Are there some things that still need to be made better?
No, I think we're fine. I mean, we obviously, again, blindside hits, players who are in vulnerable positions. No, I think we've addressed that, and I think we've done a good job of suspending players or doing what's needed to be done if we feel that they've crossed the line. And we've got commissioners, and we've got we got obviously referees. The head of the referees of each league have impact on how that goes and how they should be how they should be punished and whether it's games or not games or one game, two games, or multiple games, whatever it might be. So I just think at the end of the day, from a health standpoint, I mean, we're on top of that because that's number one. That's first and foremost number one is the safety of a player.
I hate to even ask you this question based on the last trip to the national tournament you had because it was so bizarre with 50 people in there. But the NCAA for decades has tried to figure out a way to make that NCAA tournament experience better, have more fans get there. They've talked about having games go back on campus sites. They've talked about, do you have a super regional where you're bringing in more teams into one venue and trying to get everybody's fans into one building? What do you like about the current system, and where would you like to see it go?
I like the current system. I like neutral sites, period. I mean, some people, but you're going to get a lot of people who will argue against it. That's just a philosophy. That's, again, beer talk. But I do think, again, if you want to give everybody a chance to win a national championship, it should be at a neutral site. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem we have is that a lot of our neutral sites, we don't draw very well. And that's the elephant in the room right there. So when you can't draw very well, is that good?
That isn't a problem in the East. It's a problem in the West.
Well, it's not a problem if you're in Fargo or Sioux Falls, but it's been a problem in other places. So, I don't know, Schulze.
When you have Pennsylvania hosting a Western regional, something's wrong.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, a lot of it's just that's the bid process, though. Well, that's the lack of bid process.
Because the building knows that they're not going to sell enough tickets to make it worth their while.
Right.
Well,
right.
And then you want neutral sites, but if it really becomes home ice advantage for a lot of the bigger teams, especially in the West.
Well, exactly.
You're and then go then to St. Paul and it's the Gophers, or you're going to go to Grand Forks and it's UND.
Well, but and again, then how do you do it? Do you have the number one seeds do it? Well, you have some buildings that don't even have locker room capabilities. I mean, you'd be surprised. You
right.
know what? That can't do it.
For those
what
arguing are you gonna do? That it should be on site.
Spontaneously try to get hotel rooms.
Right.
I mean, there's just there's a lot of moving parts, guys, to all this. You don't think that we've sat in rooms and tried to hammer this out, but it's not as easy as you think. It's like I said, it's good beer talk, but logistically, it's not easy.
Okay, Frozen 4 year, the year after that in Fort Wayne. It was a decent crowd there in Fort Wayne that year. What was the experience like for your players?
I don't even remember Schultzy that, but I don't. But
I'm,
I think
I'm saying, is it as bad as
no,
what
it's great.
People are saying?
I think when you're playing in a national tournament, the experience is playing in the game. That's me, personally. People say, well, a loud, you know, a big crowd. Big crowd's great, but to me, it's just the experience of playing in the game. That shows that obviously you had you had a successful season.
Well,
so.
And you know, I remember the first national tournament in Amherst. It wasn't a very big crowd for Denver Bemidji State.
Well, it was noon.
Yet, you know, the experience that you come away with was it was an awesome game. It was a great experience. It's not, there was only 300 people in the crowd. I don't remember that much unless you talk into more detail about it.
Well, there was more than 300.
Oh, yeah, there was.
Well, I know there was more than 300, but it wasn't sold out by any means.
No, but it was actually, those were good crowds in Amherst that year, I thought. I thought they were good crowds.
Well, then Green Bay, you get the, again, neutral site, but it's really home ice advantage for the Badgers. That was a
rocking
environment.
But that's all right, though. I mean, that's not their home. It's not their home. It's not their home arena. So
it is their home city.
Yeah.
4 hours north.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, why is Fargo and Sioux Falls been... They're good hockey communities, but you know what? Obviously, Grand Forks is 60 miles away, you know, from Fargo, and you know Sioux Falls. Whether it, you know, you have Minnesota. Like I know when my son played in Sioux Falls, it was awesome. But you had Mankato, you had St. Cloud, and you had UMD, and then you had Air Force. So you know, teams could, you know, people could travel. But if you have
Denver and Bemidji going to Amherst, it's not going to be as good.
No,
exactly.
But if you have, if you're close to the probably the Twin Cities, the hub, you know, the hub, you're in Fargo or Sioux Falls, there's always going to be some Minnesota teams, so I think that helps too. But again, these are the same debates we've had for 20 years. You know, it's the same stuff, and I don't know what's going to happen down the road. You just don't know. I mean, we've talked, do you turn it into like a baseball, like the baseball regionals or super regionals and things like that, or, you know, or do you keep it what it is, or do you have the top four teams, or do you let somebody? Do you let campus sites bid? Well, they got to make the tournament too.
Mm.
You know, so there's this. You know, these are the debates we've had. There's no question, and nothing's easy, and it's hard to agree on any of this because we all have different motives and different reasons why we like something.
Well, it did switch up in the WCHA and the CCHA for your postseason is at the top seeds and goes to, down to one single game at the last
We're
standing.
Actually going to our semifinals one game this year, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, there has been some changes made at the league level.
Yeah.
And actually, I love that change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going to a neutral site. And let's not kid ourselves. The X was unbelievable for a long time.
If you got a good neutral site, though.
Yeah, nobody can replicate that ever again.
Yeah.
But if you could. But
in Mankato last year, had Mankato won? And had you guys won? That would have been unbelievable.
Yeah. No, it's just more. It's easier because of our footprint, too. That's part of it, too. Our footprint. There's probably not a building in our footprint that we could just. We're just all too far away from each other,
right.
Is all I'm getting at.
Yep.
You know, so this is the best thing for our league. But as for the NCAA tournament, I'm a neutral site guy.
You mentioned Sioux Falls. Augustana has said they're going to add Division I hockey. Long Island University added it last year. Lindenwood has been on the fence forever, it seems. Iowa State has been on the fence forever, it seems. Where do you see potential further growth in college hockey?
I don't know. It's a million-dollar question.
Well, more than that.
it's a commitment, boy. It's a commitment level if you want to add hockey. That's for sure. So, I don't know.
A lot of people are just assuming Augustana would be accepted into the CCHA, and I'm like, why would you just assume that? I don't know that they're a good fit. I think 8 is a perfect fit right now for the CCHA.
Yeah, there's just, you know what, that's an administrative question, and there's a lot of things happening right now, and you just got to let things play out. But, you know, obviously it's a strong market. It's a great hockey city. It's good to see schools that they'll be successful in hockey. That's for sure. They're going to build a brand new $40 to $50 million rink. So I mean, they're doing things the right way. So that's what you want to see.
Well, I know with St. Thomas coming on board Division One, the women of Bemidji State women have already played at St. Thomas. Have you been to that rink yet, Tom?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Yeah. To me, my first take on the St. Thomas rink was that it reminded me a little bit of the John Glass, because it's got the bleachers on one side, the benches opposite the press box, low ceiling. I know you guys won't play them until December 3rd and 4th. It was fun, and we had a good crowd there that night. I would assume that Bemidji State will get a good crowd at that series against St. Thomas, but do you know what their timeline is for them getting a new rink?
I don't, Kelly. I don't know what's happening. They haven't announced anything yet, so I'm sure that's still in the process of trying to figure that out.
Coach Tom Ceratore, our guest here tonight, the Tom Ceratore Show, every Wednesday night here at 6. We have tavern gift cards to give away, like 4 of them.
Wow.
And the tavern has kicked in men's and women's hockey tickets for this weekend.
Woohoo!
Sweet.
Nice.
So we have lots of giveaways to get done. While we take a break, we're back with more of the Tom Ceratore Show next, right here on the Beaver Radio Network.
The Huddle at the Tavern on the South Shore. The Huddle is the Beaver Radio Network on WMIS-FM, The River.
Ah, the taco. Is there anything more delightfully simple and delicious? At Taco John's, we think not. There's a reason more people choose our crispy beef tacos. That's because we cook each crispy shell fresh in-house every day, then fill it with our signature 100% American beef, mild sauce, lettuce, and cheese. 5 classic ingredients. Taco John's loves tacos so much, we not only put it in our name, we gave it a special day. Taco Tuesday. Get seasoned crispy beef tacos for just 99 cents each every Taco Tuesday at Taco John's. Bigger, bolder, better.
Drive through and pick up only at Taco John's.
That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge-watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
Got health coverage on your mind? We can help. I'm Alan Zutz with Thrivent Financial, and we've got UCare, Medicare, and individual and family plans for every budget and need. And now is the right time to enroll for next year. Call us to find out why UCare plans offer you more, including doctor choice and extras you want. Call Alan Zutz or Rice Miller at 444-0202. That's 444-0202.
Hi, Dan the Chevy Man. Dan the GM Man here. That's right, we have Buick, GMC, along with the full Chevrolet lineup. As we are finally coming out of the pandemic, now is the time to come see the Donlinger difference. We have a lot of new and pre-owned vehicles arriving daily. You are sure to find the vehicle you want. Also, don't forget about our excellent customer service, full body shop, and dependable parts and service departments. For all your automotive needs, remember Donlinger GM in Bemidji. Chevy, find new roads.
The Huddle at the Tavern on the South Shore. The Huddle is the Beaver Radio Network on WMIS-FM, The River.
Welcome back to the Tom Ceratore Show. Coach's Huddle here at the Tavern on South Shore. We had more stuff to give away than I even thought we did.
Yeah, Jody running all over the place.
We are having so much fun giving away prizes. We got gift cards to the Tavern. We've got tickets to both Beaver men's and women's hockey games this weekend.
Beaver football and Mannheim Steamroller tickets.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't even know we had those.
Wow.
There you go. All the more reason to be here when we do the show Wednesday night.
Looks like Jody's giving them the chance to pick what they want. That's cool. I mean, because
some people already have tickets.
Well, yeah, that whole table's probably got season tickets to Beaver hockey. So, nice.
Bowling Green comes to town this weekend, Tom. And, you know, if I was to be committed to have to pick a turning point for your season last year? To me, it was that trip to Bowling Green in January. Tough place to play. And if I am remembering correct, it was a tie on...
No, we lost on Friday.
And we won Thursday, Friday. Game one, you lost. And you won the 3-on-3 on the second night, and you went on a tear then after that. You agree that was kind of a turning point?
I do. I think that's very good observation, Schulze. And it was a big win. I mean, and we kind of came – I can't remember, but it was a tough series. And I don't know if we came from behind on Saturday night. But anyway, winning that sucker how we did – it was a beautiful play. It was a beautiful play from Harris to Somoza. If you remember, we had a breakaway right off the draw, center ice.
Yeah, they didn't match up.
No, they went three across.
The guy on the wing.
They went three across. And anyway, the way we won was outstanding. And you're right, Schulze. It just kind of jump started us.
Why has that place been such a difficult place for not only you but everyone to play?
Oh, it's just a different building. It's just a different. We speak about. We were speaking earlier about dimensions of rinks and corners and end walls and all that stuff. It's all of that. It's such a little rink, and they recruit to that rink, and which they should. And it's a place for. It's not. You can't hide. You can't hide there, and it's just a. It's a crazy place.
Well, what did they lose from last year?
They lost a lot. They lost a lot of guys. Yeah, they lost.
That's what I thought.
They lost some numbers, absolutely.
Well, you got three guys on your roster right now that have some success against this Bowling Green team. One of them, Owen Sillinger, he's got 8 points, 10 career games. You got Alex Iarullo, he's got 6 points. And you were talking about Somoza just a few moments ago. That was only one of two of his game winners have been against Bowling Green. So what do you expect to see out of your veterans? What do you need them to do this weekend?
Well, I mean, they know what they're – it's like any weekend, you want the same things out of these guys. It doesn't matter who you're playing. I mean, they got to be your leaders, and those are the guys who they're the guys who carry the team. So that's pretty standard for those guys, and that's what they need to do. Just like last weekend, Kirk up. And Iarullo score in the first period. Yes, your young guy's not going to do that. So that's what the old guys are going to do. That's what the experience is going to do. So when the going gets tough and these games are all tight, those guys have to. You know, they got to rely on their experience.
How's Bowling Green been so far this year?
They're 2-0-2. So they're playing good hockey right now. Really good hockey.
You obviously have ties to Northern Minnesota and to high school hockey here. Ty Eigner was a long time. High school coach in the state as well. How has he changed where they are recruiting, geographically speaking?
I feel a little bit. They got a little Minnesota flavor. That's probably the biggest thing. But then by and large, they're recruiting where they've always recruited. It's like you have to. You got to know your identity, and you know you got to make sure you go to those places that you've had strong history, and they've had a strong history in Ontario. Michigan, you know, that's the nucleus a lot of their guys, but he's definitely added some Minnesota flavor, there's no question.
Well, what do you think is their biggest strength that you've seen for this team so far that's 2-0-2?
Well, I think their strength is they're hard to play against. They always play a strong, heavy game. They're really good in front of the net. They're very good defensively. They're physical. I mean, they're usually not a lot of fun to play against, and he'll probably say the same thing about us, but that's probably the best way of putting it, you know, and it's a dogfight every time you play them.
I've always thought that the town, I mean, it's basically just the university that's there in Bowling Green, and they're Division I and everything, and you drive past you're coming out of Detroit. And it's like a 45-minute drive. And before you can blink, you're in Toledo, which has the moniker of the armpit of the world. I might agree.
Wow.
Schulze.
Oh, wow. Throwing Toledo Ouch. Under the bus.
Have you ever been there, Bess?
Yes. No, I've been through there. It is.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're in farm fields, and you come around this corner on the interstate, and you're like, what the heck is that thing? And that's their football stadium. Out on the edge of town.
Yeah.
And they've got a gigantic basketball and volleyball and wrestling facility. Where does hockey fit in their pecking order right now, Tom?
I think it's high. I I think hockey's their marquee sport.
It used to be football.
That's just me. I'm a hockey coach, so I'm saying that. But I mean,
they beat the Gophers this year.
Their hockey team can win a national championship. That's how I look at it. Their hockey team has won a national championship. So that's how I look at things.
It's not exactly the hockey hotbed in Ohio, I wouldn't imagine.
It's a great hockey town.
It is.
It's a phenomenal hockey town. Yeah, they love their hockey. They've had hockey since the 60s. Mm-hmm. No, they've had hockey for 50 years. They just had their 50th anniversary last year. No, it's a great hockey town.
Is Ohio a big hockey state?
No, but it doesn't
Most
matter. They're hockey, they're, but they're a
Michigan,
hockey town.
Yeah.
And a lot of these places have they're great hockey communities because they've had hockey for a lot of years. You got to remember, there's a lot of hockey, great hockey towns that have had minor pro hockey since the 40s, since the 50s. And they may not be producing players right and left, but they love the game. And they've had that sport, and they've had rinks, and they've had that sport there for many years. So, and they've got a great following. They've got a great fan base. So, that's how I look at things. I look at things totally different. But it's 45 minutes from Detroit. It's an hour from the Ontario border. It's 3.5 hours from Toronto. I mean, you know, when you look at those things, that's how you look at things. You know, they're within 4 hours of a lot of hockey players. A lot of hockey players. So that's kind of, you know, that's. When you look at those things, they're in a very it's a very fertile hockey area, that's for sure.
I didn't realize they were that close to Toronto.
Yeah.
Man.
Maybe four, you know, but it's right there.
Well, Bowling Green's coming off of a weekend where they played an in-state school, Miami of Ohio. Bowling Green put up 6 goals against Miami's 4 the first night and then tied them 2-2. They scored a lot of goals this last weekend.
Yes, they did.
They always do.
Have you watched a lot of film on them just yet, or are you?
Yeah, we watched the tape this week. They're a good hockey team, and big points against Miami last week, and they're arch rival, and it's a big weekend for those guys. They had a lot of success.
I bet that place was rocking.
Oh yeah, no, it was a sold out building in both places. It was crazy on tape.
Wow. What are some of their tendencies? Like, what can Beaver fans expect to see?
Well, they're not going to be fun to play against. They're going to play tight to the vest. They're going to be physical. They've got very good special teams. Little things that they do well too. You're going to see low to high. They go low to high. They shoot. They create a lot of traffic in front of the net. They box out well defensively. It's hard to get second chance opportunities against them. They just, again, they play hard. They play the game the right way, and they're not fun to play against.
Beavers in Bowling Green this Friday and Saturday at the Sanford Center. Love to see you inside the Sanford Center if you can't make it. We'll of course have both games for you right here on the Beaver Radio Network. Time now for our Where Are They Now? And I was thinking of some local guys recently, Tom, and Tyler Larkey's name popped into my head from Park Rapids. What is Larkey up to these days?
I saw Larks a few years ago, but he's in the construction business and he's living in Park Rapids, and you know it, and that's doing his thing. And what a player for us! And I look back at that Frozen Four team and that team the next year, and man, did he play a vital, just a key role for us. We put him against all the opposition's top line. He ate hard minutes up. He was the first guy over the boards on the penalty kill. His senior year, we put him on the power play, and he played. I mean, he just played a lot of different roles that his senior year. But he just never said a word. He just went about his business the right way, and he was a joy to coach, and he played the game the right way.
Safe to say that he is one of those guys that, as a coach, for lack of a better term, you know you're not going to get a point and a half a night from him, but you knew exactly what you were going to get from him.
Yeah.
That as a coach is the perfect player, right? The guy you know what you're getting from every single night?
Absolutely, and he never said boo. He just worked, and he worked, and he worked, and he was so coachable. And if you ask our players at that particular time, they all would have loved to have him on the line because he did a lot of the dirty work.
Well, and I think he and Chris McKelvey were synonymous together because of the penalty kill, arguably probably your two best forward penalty killers that I've seen in my time here.
They're right up there, Biff. No question. Those guys were partners a lot of years, and they killed off a lot of penalties. We've had some good guys over the years, and we've had some like right now, even with Owen and Ethan, those guys have, I mean, remarkable with the kind of job they've done together too as a group. And I like to keep guys together just because they feel good about it. It's kind of like a team little, you know, it's a team thing. They like it, and they got good chemistry, and they work off one another. They just have that innate chemistry together, I guess is what I'm getting at. And that was our strongest group, there's no question. And they could be right there with Larkson and Chris, because they did. They killed off a lot of penalties together.
Time for our player profile. We talked briefly about Matthias Scholl earlier, but at what point did he commit? At what point did you determine he was coming in this year?
Well, he had to come in this year because he was 2000, so he had to come in this year because his junior eligibility was done. I think Scholl's, he committed probably January, February last year, I think. I can't even remember. But I think January or February.
What drew you to him as far as in the recruiting? What drew you to him as far as recruiting? What caught your eye?
We liked him in Fairbanks in the North American Hockey League. We felt he was actually very. We felt he was a lot like Driscoll. He's a very good athlete, you know, undersized goaltender, but just a great athlete. And then I went to Youngstown last year, and it wasn't easy for him because Youngstown's team wasn't very good. But overall, we just think he's a very athletic goaltender. We thought he was competitive as all get out, and we liked him. We made a call, and that was, you know, we're excited to have him. But we did. We thought he was kind of very similar to Driscoll. We felt we had size and Gavin Enright, you know, so that's the one thing. So we weren't really worried, you know, what about that. We wanted to make sure, again, that we had a really athletic goalie. We just felt he was a good, you know, very athletic goalie.
He also has ties to Bowling Green. His brother played goalie for the Falcons from 2013 to 2017. That's a pretty cool side mm-hmm. story about him going.
And from California.
Yeah, that's just not a hockey hat. Well, it wasn't a hockey hat bed when Schulze was there, but
it is now.
It is.
I think the story of every California hockey player is interesting. Mm-hmm. A lot of them started with roller hockey and then said, you know what, I'm going to go with ice hockey. Matthias, his grandpa and his dad were both goalies. So he's always
so
played.
So was his brother, apparently, right?
Yeah.
So he's always.
I did not know that,
so
you know more than I do.
All in the family of goalies, apparently.
Just so happens to help that I interviewed him this morning for Friday's game.
Well, I could see, you know, maybe if your dad and grandpa are goalies, but if your brother's a goalie, I mean, somebody's got to shoot the puck at. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's why a lot of brother combos aren't necessary. I mean, one may be the goalie, but not the other, because somebody's got to shoot the puck.
Yeah, no, it's interesting.
In the neighborhood pickup games, right?
I don't know if
there aren't many neighborhood pickup games in California.
I don't know if there's neighborhood pickup games anywhere right now, baseball or anything.
Well,
it's just
true.
Different times.
But that brother's playing on the backyard or in the garage.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
absolutely.
Somebody's taking the shot. I guess they can rotate around.
Well, right. Schulze laughed at me the other day when I was talking. We were talking about Matthias. Is it Matthias? And I said, he must be one of those kids that's from, you know, Sweden or Finland or something. And Schulze's like, you know, he's from California. Like, his name just sounds like he should be from.
Sounds German. I don't know why.
It sounds Scandinavian to me.
Yeah.
But
Matthias, that's, you know, Scandinavian.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And his brother's name is Tomas or Thomas.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a story.
I don't remember his brother.
His brother, I think, was, I don't know if we played a
played
ton.
Played a lot,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But cool
you mentioned
stuff.
Being a good athlete. What are some other athletic traits, for lack of a better term, that make a good goalie? I mean, do you have to be fast? Do you have to be nimble?
I think you have to be fast. I think you got to look at – the biggest thing is laterally, because – you know, we always say horizontal passes, you know.
Which, so a defensive back in football.
Yeah, probably similar. And then if you got size, and our athletic. That's holy moly! Look at the NHL. That's their stick. They're full of 6'2" to 6'5" athletic goalies. Mm-hmm. You know. Then so they, now you got that. You know, you got that faction where you can't see any net either.
Is it true still, or I don't even know if it was, because I would always argue against it, but that the goalie's the best skater on the team?
You heard
that before, I'm assuming, right? That the goalie's the best skater, and I never agreed with that.
No,
I'm like,
I don't know about that. I don't know how you even, how do you even say that? Like, I don't know. I mean, it helps having a goalie who's a good skater. All I'm getting is what I'm getting at, but whether they're the best skater on the team, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, like move left or right. They don't have to move much.
But I'll tell you though,
it's a workout.
Physically demanding.
No, and it's a fraction of a second though, Biss. I mean, going post to post is critical. And, you know, mostly when you've got horizontal passes all the time in the offensive zone, that's why you try to make sure you keep the puck on one half of the rink. Because once it goes across, holy moly, it gets tough. It's tough for the goalie. But the quicker you can get across, obviously the easier it is for you to stop the puck. And now if you're bigger and you can get across, there's just more room. There's room to get hit. There's more room to get hit when the bigger you are too. So, but he's a really athletic goaltender. I think the biggest thing last weekend, how you can actually point out that he's pretty athletic. His puck play was good. I don't know if but his puck play, and there was two plays in the last 4 minutes on Saturday night. One is he bypassed the pressure and kept the puck going with about 3.5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go, which I thought was a big play, which, you know, you want to eliminate, you want to minimize whistles at that time of the game too, because you don't want to give offensive zone faceoffs, because typically that they're going to have offensive zone faceoffs, and that can get dicey.
Well, so can't the goalie play in the puck? I mean, that's what you're talking about, right? Where he's going behind the net and doing something with the puck, which has become an integral part of hockey these days. But it also is one of the most unnerving.
Well, only in Huntsville on the Zamboni end.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
bad bounce off of that wall for the last 15 years.
Not just that, but I mean, how you play the puck can. I mean, we've all seen it, and it wasn't the first goal against Duluth given up that way, where the goalie went behind the next stake stall and didn't play it properly. BSU, it's a tap in goal.
I can't remember, but
it's
an integral part of the game. You have to be able. It's just whether you like it or not, you have to play the puck.
Well, how well you do it as a freshman, I would think that'd be the most nerve wracking part.
Well, he was calm. That's where I'm getting at. He bypassed the pressure with about 3.5 to go, and then with about 30 to 40 seconds to go. They kind of chunked one in from the, right outside the blue line, and I think Northern thought he was going to freeze and they're going to get a faceoff, and he had a little time, and here came our defenseman, and he bypassed their guy, put it in the corner, and we cleared it, and we ate another 15 to 20 seconds off the clock, which was huge. And again, we don't want a faceoff with 35 seconds to go, and I just thought that was, he had the presence of mind at that particular time to make a play like that, and that just told me again that, you know, he was cool as a cucumber.
It's Wednesday. I have a feeling I know what the answer is going to be to this question. You haven't determined who's going to play yet on Friday night, I would venture a guess. How well he played last weekend, and as meaningless as a CCHA Goalie of the Week award is, he got it for a reason. How much does that play into your decision for this weekend?
Well, it's obviously plays into it. I mean, there's no question. He's feeling it. He was part of a big weekend. Got to keep that going. You don't ever know what's Saturday, but I mean, and again, whether you play well or not, who knows? But I mean, but no, you, that's, it's a pretty easy decision, Schultz.
Roll with the hot hand.
Mm-hmm.
He usually doesn't make that announcement on a Wednesday.
Well, you cornered me right there. I didn't know how I could deflect that, to be honest with you.
You could have said, we'll make that decision tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, but the way you went about it,
he entrapped you into that answer. Yeah.
I thought, Schultz, he's playing head games right there.
Yeah.
It happens.
Way to go, Schultz.
Yeah, Schultz. I let you under the hood because you let yourself under the hood, and I couldn't. There's no way I couldn't talk my way out of it.
That might be the first time ever I've asked Tom a question where he couldn't deflect if he wanted to. Best of luck this weekend, Tom.
All right, thanks, gang.
Tom Ceratori, head coach of the Beavers on the Tom Ceratori Show here at the Tavern on South Shore. We shift our focus to Beaver football. You know, that team just beat Duluth.
Mm-hmm. In Duluth since first time since whenever.
I told Coach Bolte we would mention that once. Don't burn that right now.
No.
Okay, all right.
Hey, hold
okay.
on.
Coach Bolte joins us when we come back. It's the Coach's Huddle at the Tavern here on the Beaver Radio Network.
The Huddle at the Tavern on the South Shore. The Huddle is the Beaver Radio Network on WMIS-FM, The River.
What's up, y'all? This is Chase Rice hanging outdoors with an ice-cold Mountain Dew. You know, it's easy to tell who really loves the outdoors. One thing, there's a rack on your car and a hitch on the back of your truck. There's a garage full of toys from wakeboards to dirt bikes. And there's a cooler full of Mountain Dew, always at the ready. Because when it's time to get out and do, you know, hit the lake or the deer stand, a cooler of Mountain Dew, that's as important a piece of outdoor gear as your four-wheeler or your fishing rod. Mountain Dew. Do the dew.
At Jimmy John's, we don't make sandwiches. We make the sandwich of sandwiches. That also happens to have delicious meats and fresh veggies all sandwiched between fresh baked bread. Jimmy John's, the sandwich of sandwiches. Order, pickup, or delivery on the app.
Jimmy John's new Chicken Caesar Wrap. With seasoned chicken, crisp veggies, Caesar dressing, and crunchy croutons, it's the best salad you've ever had sandwiched into a wrap.
Woo!
New summer wraps for a limited time at Jimmy John's. The sandwich of... no, the wrap of sandwiches!
You've trained for this all year. Endless hours of cardio, conditioning, and weights. And now, you are ready. Ready to trek back to your seat from the concession stand. Through the lines, lost fans, and that mascot who wants you to do a little dancey dance. All without spilling a drop of your ice-cold Bud Light. Welcome back to football, sports fans.
Experience light when and where you want it with Hunter Douglas window treatments from Sterling Carpet One. Our PowerView system lets you move your shades according to schedules you set, day or night, whether you're home or away. Available in colors and fabrics to suit your style. Hunter Douglas, live effortlessly.
You dream, we design. Sterling Carpet One.
The following is a special presentation of the Beaver Radio Network. It's time for the Huddle at the Tavern of South Shore. Each Wednesday, get into the huddle with Beaver coaches and student athletes. The huddle is Beaver football.
And shotgun snap looks to pass into the corner of the end zone. Wide open, underthrown, but caught. Touchdown, Bemidji State. Touchdown to Brendan Bolio. Bolio, his second touchdown of the season. Just a fade right down the far sideline.
The Tavern on the South Shore, where Lakeside meets your hungriest. The Huddle is the Beaver Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tavern and the Coach's Huddle here on the Beaver Radio Network. Boy, did we give away a bunch of stuff there. Love it.
That was fun.
Love it.
Thanks to Jody for helping us out here tonight.
It seemed like every winner was on a different side of the bar.
I love it.
Get her steps in.
Is what it is. Beaver football team went to Minnesota Duluth this past weekend with high expectations, and Coach Bolte is joining us. Congratulations. I'm glad that can finally be put behind you. I promise you this will be the only time we say first time since World War II.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I put it behind already. So I've been telling the team, I'm like, we're undefeated against Duluth in past the COVID era, so yeah. I don't care anymore. So.
In the post-COVID era, yeah.
I love that. I love it.
Seriously, 1999 since the Beavers beat them anywhere. 1941 since the last beat them in Duluth. That is hard to fathom. It's not like you've only played each other 12 times in the last 80 years. How much of a relief is it for your players? It's over.
You know, we downplayed it. Obviously, you don't want to talk about it all the time with the guys, but we've been in so many close games with them over the years. And our kids, as I talk to them, I'm like, we step off the bus like we own the place. And they did. They didn't back down. And obviously, there's some gamesmanship on the road. And Duluth's not going to – it's a tough place to play, I'll put it that way. And fun crowd and all that. But the kids responded. And yeah, it's nice to – put that all behind us, the Pearl Harbor analogies and everything else. But I'm happy for the kids. They found a way to get it done. It was really enjoyable day for everybody.
That game played out like so many others have over the last 10 years. Was there a point where, like, we've got this one?
When we recovered the fumble with like a minute and a half to go, yeah, I felt pretty good. But, you know, I felt honestly in the third quarter we had the game, like the momentum had changed. We were playing better on both sides defensively. We played a pretty good game except for about seven plays. And controlled the line of scrimmage, we did a lot of good things, but we just gave up some plays that, missed interceptions and just things that, big plays. And then all of a sudden, you know, the offense was getting in rhythm and Malik Williams was just unbelievable. Brandon started settling down and, and then we were getting the ball back to, you know, have a chance to tie it. I think it was 35-28, and then it hit our punt return, you know, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And lo and behold, we were able to find a way. They scored, but we came right back, and I really felt at that point the pressure was on Duluth, and we kind of fed off it, got some turnovers, and were able to get out of there with a W.
Well, I was following the game while I was covering women's hockey, and I saw the score, and I'm like, oh, come on, Beavers. And then I looked later, and you guys had scored 21 points in the fourth quarter, and I'm just like, I got to look at the story to see what happened. I've never seen that kind of a comeback at a powerhouse like Duluth. What was it about your guys that they were able to do that in the fourth?
I think we're just young and dumb enough that they don't know any better. And I'm not joking. We're playing so many young guys right now. They just don't know. And, some of the upperclassmen that have, like, played in 19, and even the year before when we played over there when we lost in double overtime, like, those guys don't view Duluth as any better than us. I don't think there's that vibe against anybody in our league anymore. I think before, maybe Mankato was number one or number five, and Duluth was up there too. You know, you looked at them on film, and you're like, wow. But now it's like we've competed against teams that have beaten them. We've beaten teams that have beaten Duluth. So it's like, hey, it's just another week in the NSIC, to be honest with you. It's a tough league. But again, they did a good job battling back.
Your team seems to have a penchant for giving people heart attacks at the end of games.
Yeah, that's
including
why I got so
coach.
Many more gray hairs.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, they pull it off. I mean, Moorhead, I mean, that's back-to-back weeks where in the fourth quarter you shined the most.
Yeah, I guess we need to play a little better in the first and second would probably be the point. I was talking to Tom about his team before I jumped on, and it's a lot of similarities. Like, we're a little Jekyll and Hyde-ish at times, and it takes our offense a little bit to get in rhythm. We haven't really played great in the first quarter the last few weeks. And part of that's the O-line. I think Brandon takes a little bit of time to get some confidence in those guys because I think we're playing, three freshmen, a sophomore, and a junior in there right now, pretty young, a true freshman in the group too. So it's a little bit of getting some continuity and getting some rhythm on the offensive side of the ball. And once he gets going, man, Brandon's a machine, and he's a really good quarterback, and the offense can get behind him. And he's got so many playmakers out there. It's fun to be able to just wing the ball around like that.
I invite everyone to head to the Beaver Football Twitter page. Scroll back to Saturday afternoon. The highlights of Malik Williams on that game-winning touchdown was ridiculous.
Well, didn't he have a ridiculous day?
Three more touchdowns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Reed was on the call. Did a great job. I'm sorry. Didn't do that play justice. Unbelievable play.
Now Ault will bring Malik Williams to the near side, so there's two receivers each. 10 on the play clock. Ault, pressure, throws it complete at the 25. Malik Williams makes a move at the 25. He's on his feet at the 15, the 10, the 5. Malik Williams is in for a touchdown! Malik Williams! Made three defenders miss, and he scores a touchdown!
He catches the ball near the sideline. Just that first part of this catch. Stops on a dime. Not easy to do. What's the biggest part of that? Footwork, hips, brain, what is it?
Genetics. I think you throw that in there. He's a remarkably gifted athlete. His stop and start is different than we've ever had. Honestly, you don't see very many kids that can do it in the NSIC. But he's kind of got that rope-a-dope deal. Like, he can accelerate, and he stops and jumps back. And
which is what he did on that play, and that's when the first guy missed him.
Yeah. Well, the first kid came in for the shot where he kind of sidestepped him. The second kid had him dead to rights, and he just slipped him. And then the third guy just, like, honestly, he just made him fall down. a few years ago, I think it was opener of 19 when we were at Northern State. He did the exact same thing where he kind of walked in the end zone. I went to kill him because he just literally walked in the end zone. I think that's your exact call that day. He's like, oh, he just walked in the end zone. But, yeah, it was a remarkable play, and Brandon did a good job in the pocket getting it out to him. But, man, yeah, he's dynamic, and they can't double him. You got other weapons on the field. You got Duncan Busby, who made a one-handed ridiculous catch on the touchdown before. Bolio's a tough matchup, and really I think they were honestly putting more pressure and doubling on Bolio throughout the game.
Well, but that's generally been a good idea for your opponents this year.
Yeah, yeah, and like I said, it's nice to have complementary weapons out on the field where you can kind of spread it out. And the other big part in the second half is we were able to run the ball. Like, McHale, he took some shots, but he had a great game. I mean, he only averaged 3.5 or 4 yards a game or per play. But against Duluth, I think they're giving up basically a yard per rush going into the thing. So it just took a little bit of time to get some continuity going over there, and had to make some checks and some adjustments at half. And give a lot of credit to the offensive coaches. They did a nice job.
Well, defensively, obviously, the team came through big time in the fourth quarter. UMD was able to score in each of the other quarters, including, as you mentioned, when the turnover with your on special teams resulted in a, 35-21 lead at the time for Duluth. But your defense doesn't hold the fort. We're not talking about the win.
Right, and I think from my perspective, again, it's similar to the game that we lost here in 19 where we chart plays. You know, they had 75 plays that game. 70 of them, they had like 145 yards. Well, the other five, they hit for like 250. And it's like, it's the same thing that happened. We gave up a 55-yard pass play where, you know, we had a defender jump, went through his hands, the kid caught it. It happened twice where they hit big plays where could have, or really three times where we could have had interceptions. And that kind of flipped. You know, you had Malik Knox make a play that got the interception. We got a turnover. We got the block punt, which is huge, by Andrew Manueli. And all of a sudden, the plays that we missed out on, I think, in the first half, all of a sudden we were making in the second half. And it was great to see the defense. They need that. We're a good defensive unit. We just haven't lived up to the expectation that we have here. And hopefully we continue to grow on that.
I'm taking a look at the stats, and they're just unbelievable. You know, you look at Duluth had so many more yards, total yards, passing yards, just a few, and possession time, almost 10 more minutes. But BSU was able to pull out this victory, and Coach, I know every single one of your touchdowns was a passing touchdown. Obviously, Brandon Ault was playing fantastic, but did you see something in the Bulldog defense that you guys just kept throwing the ball?
Well, they make it really hard to, A, even try to run the ball. They're going to pack the box. They have good interior D-line and linebacker play. But they run a pressure-oriented defense where you have to take shots downfield. You have to be able to throw the ball to be successful against them. And that's really the only teams that have been able to beat them, even Wayne State, and hitting big plays. It's very similar to when we lost, I think, in 18 over there, where we hit three or four big plays to keep us in the game, then we end up losing in overtime. But that's how you beat Duluth. And we've, even when Jordy, I think, was a senior, when we lost in a shootout, it was like 50-48 or whatever it was. We knew we kind of had the game plan. We just haven't had a quarterback the last couple of years. And no offense to the guys that were playing. I mean, Jared Henning did a great job for us. And some of those other backups did a nice job, even Emmett. But it's different when you have your starter and the complement of receivers that he has. So it was I wouldn't say it was a perfect game plan. I obviously wish we could run the ball better and not give up as many yards. But end of the day, when you only give up 14, you know, yards in the fourth quarter and create some turnovers, you feel pretty good about it.
So each week there is a Division II football popularity contest poll. That means nothing. This week, week 8, is the first week of the regional rankings, which mean everything when it comes to the national tournament. The top 7 in that final final regional ranking, there's your NCAA playoff field. One seed gets a bye, 2 plays, 7, 3 plays, 6, and so on. You guys are number 6 in that one. That was released on Monday. Interviewed Jalen Jenkins on Monday. Said, I know the mantra is going to be one game at a time, and it has to be. I get that. Have you talked about that poll and let your guys feel good about that, because Beavers haven't been in there in quite a while.
Yeah, I think the last time was my first year as a head coach. I think, to be honest with you, and we lost to Duluth and we were out of it. And so, yeah, we talked about it on Sunday when we got back. We talked about it on Tuesday's practice after we got done and talked about just that. You congratulate them on where you're at. Like, you got to look back and reflect. You got to be proud of what you've done in the past and learn from mistakes and what you've done well. But at the same point, you got to turn the page, and we talk about being 1-0 on the day, 1-0 on the rep, and 1-0 on the weekend. And so it's a process for us because we're not a finished product yet. Like, we're still growing as a team. We're still, honestly, getting guys back from injuries and sorting out lineups. So it's a challenge that way. But, yeah, heck yeah, you got to look back and say great job and learn off it.
You'll be proud of what his answer was. I'm paraphrasing, but have you looked at the league the rest of this year? Anybody can beat anybody. We just got to go out and beat Southwest. I think he's heard that message from somebody.
We've all been around long enough, Brent, that, this is the one thing. I mean, it was beating Duluth that's been a problem. And making the national tournament has been the other goal that has not been obtained. But it's within reach here with three games to go. But as you know, it can all change in one game.
Oh, yeah. That's the fun part of sport. Like, I heard this from my... Long story, I'm not going to get all the way in it, but my college counselor, what do you want to talk about, my advisor, was my head wrestling coach at Cornell. His name is Steve DeVries, and he had a cabin up in Grand Marais, still has. So he was up closing the cabin, so he came back and watched the game. Was a U.S. Olympic wrestler and gold medalist, awesome guy. And he's like, after the game, he called me on the way back. He's like, don't forget, pressure's it's a privilege to have pressure. Oh, yeah, it is. And if you don't have the pressure, you're like, if you're worried about recruiting or going on to, the next season, pressure is a good thing, and you just got to deal with it the right way. So, heck yeah, we're in the conversation. That's where we wanted to be at the end of the year. Win the North is obviously the main part of it, and then see what happens at the end of the year if you can get that accomplished.
What is the process of that regional poll? Who does it? Is it subjective? Is it a group of people? Is it a computer? What is it?
It's a great question. I was asked to be on it, and I turned it down a couple of years ago, and they never asked me to be back on it, so I don't know. What it is it's a compilation of a lot of things. So your strength of schedule, which is weird for us because we're in a closed conference. The other part of it is a grouping of coaches, so there's going to be a representative from each of the leagues that you have. Actually, I think there's two. And then they have some ADs and some external people on it, and that's really what it comes down to with the selection. And there's some... earned access, which kind of burned us years ago when we beat Winona and we're 9-2. They were 9-2 and they got in ahead of us. A year later, they changed it. So if it was head to head, you can get in, which thanks a year later.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, I haven't honestly spent a lot of time looking at it because I just keep worrying about the task at hand with Southwest. I guess if we win the next couple games and get to week 10 or week 11 in the same situation, then I'll probably start paying more attention to it. But at this point, I'm like, I guess Jalen's answer is about right. We'll just worry about Southwest.
Well, if anybody remembers your last game with Southwest, there's plenty of reason to be worried about them. That was the week after the Augustana homecoming win, and you had the same stinking thing happen the next week.
Yeah, we've been in a lot of odd games. I don't know how else to put it. And Kevin's been around for, I think, the majority
lot of them.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I guess it's good. I think he's been around for more wins than losses. But, yeah, just been crazy. And I think it just goes back to the kids. Like, they don't ever think they're out of anything. I think we were down 24 rip the last time we played them with, 10 minutes to go on the fourth.
And won.
Yeah. Again, the cardio. There's something about you, I think. It's your coaching style that just brings out the best at the end.
Yeah, I guess. I got to figure it out to jumpstart them better, I guess. But no, yeah, we've had some crazy games over the years, and especially the last 2 weeks. And you mentioned the Augustana, and I mean Sioux Falls, Augustana, Southwest. Yeah, there's some the crazy ones. And I was talking to Rich Yonner just the other day too, and he's like, I don't remember any crazier games. But we always say that, and he started rattling, all these wins off. I'm like, yeah, I think it just goes back to the culture that you create in the program. The kids are out there doing it. It's not the coaches. They believe it, and you give them the opportunity. And I do think our coordinators, Coach Bish, and does a great job on defense, and Carson's fantastic on offense, can make adjustments. And I think that's a big part of it. Like, why do we win in the second half? Because you have to make adjustments off of what teams are doing in the first. So kudos to those guys on each side of the ball for doing that. And and hopefully we can keep it rolling.
Well, if you look on paper, Southwest is 2-6 right now in the season.
Game's not played on paper, Kel.
Exactly, exactly. What are some of the things that you've seen out of Southwest on film that your team is kind of preparing for?
Well, they're kind of a scary team because they don't have anything to lose. So you're going to see everything thrown at you. Honestly, kind of like Duluth did. I mean, Duluth threw everything except the kitchen sink at us. It felt like over there, they ran triple option stuff from the 1940s at us, and I've never seen anybody get underneath and run split back beer in college in a long time. They did it one drive and wildcat stuff, you name it. But Southwest is probably known probably a little bit more for their offense. They've had really good quarterback play. Coach Sauter, obviously, good quarterback himself, and really good offensive scheme. I don't think their quarterback play is as dynamic as it has been. So they've been relying on the run game, and they usually play a super fast tempo, even faster than ours. They don't do that anymore. They kind of suck the life out of it and run the ball, try to control it, try to move the chains. So a little bit different Southwest State team that way. But
yeah, it always seemed they were run and gun, and you guys, it was 52-49 type games.
Yeah, if you guys remember, it was probably before Schulze, you were here, but we had that 4-5 overtime game where you weren't here for that, were you, Schulze? 65-63.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That was homecoming. Stoffel's freshman year.
Yeah,
we talked about that.
We did a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
I was on offense, so I felt pretty good about myself. but the only, I think we'd still be playing that game. But the kid in overtime, because back then you just kept playing. Everybody was going for two at that point, but they went for two to tie it. He just dropped it. Like, it hit him in the hands. I'm like, we all kind of sat there, and all the kids jumped in the lake because it was homecoming. And I'm like, that was the worst ending to that game that could have happened.
In the snow.
It was
early October.
Awful. It was cold, nasty. It was fun getting wet, I guess, at the time. We probably all got pneumonia. But it was a wild environment. But, yeah, we've had some crazy ones with Southwest over the years, too.
So the BSU Athletic Department is doing something pretty cool this weekend for kids and going up to senior year in high school kids. Beaver soccer Friday afternoon, 3:00, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep.
Beaver football Saturday at 1:00. Beaver volleyball Saturday at 4:00.
Mm-hmm.
Free admission. Completely free admission.
For students 12th grade and under.
Yes.
Correct.
So any kid, basically.
Any kid.
There
That's
you
awesome.
Go. Mm-hmm. Weather's looking pretty good, too. It's not going to be snowing and
we'll
10 degrees or anything.
It's been an amazing fall, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I
saw 53 and not terrible wind, so a lot better than being at the Jags game last night. That was a little bit chilly.
I heard that. Also, BSU students will have a costume contest at all of these games. They'll be in to win a 42-inch smart TV.
That's cool.
So lots of cool things going on. You can check out the Beaver Radio Network Facebook page, beaverradionetwork.com. We've got all the details on all the free ticket stuff for the weekend.
It's military appreciation.
Nope, that's middle of November.
No.
That's the next football game.
Oh, they did change it.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Brent, how much have you fed off of that fan base this year? Because those home games have been pretty electric.
It has been. The first two, I vividly remember because I was so mad in the first half at Moorhead, I kind of blocked out the fans. But amazing. The first home game really just sticks out just because of the student section. You drastically miss that, and that's really what you all this
hard college
work.
Football's about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And those guys are awesome. The students, and it's just fun. A lot of students now, finally I got back in the room to teach. I teach a class on up top in the glass, and just students stopping by and BSing. There's a first-year experience right next to my office. They'll stop by. So it's just fun to get some normalcy back. And, yeah, we feed off. It's the 12th man getting everybody back in the chat. It's fantastic. Hopefully everybody can make it out.
The picture that we posted with that story, Jody took, little kid getting a sweatshirt signed by one of your players, and the look on his face was just unbelievable.
Priceless.
Yes, it was perfect. So, again, you can check out BeaverRadioNetwork.com for that or the Beaver Radio Network Facebook page. BSUBeavers.com, I believe, also has that information for you as well. But is it as scary to you how quickly this second half of the season is going?
every season goes like this. I complain about it all the time because it's like you do, you know, 40 weeks of work leading up to a season, and it's a snap of a finger and it's gone. So you just got to take a deep breath and enjoy the moment. I think that's what we try to explain to the kids too, and just have fun with the process, because yeah, it goes fast. And then it's just weird, especially for the 6-year guys, you know, that came back and spent all that extra time coming back. We had some seniors that my heart goes out for, you know, James Hoovy and Ryan Fuller, who got hurt on the O-line and, you know, put all that time and effort in, but yet they're there for every practice. They're still doing the lifts. It's an amazing group of guys. So extremely proud of those upperclassmen for leading the group.
Have you ever seen a year in the NSIC this goofy?
Not really.
I don't ever know who's going to win anymore.
There's a lot of parity, and I think I've
That's
said this.
Good.
I don't know if it necessarily is because everybody just got that much better. I just go back to there's no defense being played for a lot of it, because for a year and a half, we were just playing 7-on-7, like touch football, and you weren't running the ball. You're worried about getting guys hurt and all that, and I think it's getting better now. I think the defenses are showing up, but also for the teams that were the lower end of the league, you got two recruiting cycles, so you could go take a junior college or X amount of transfers, and if they weren't good, you could bring in another group. It's really worked well for Wayne. It's worked well for Northern. Honestly, Craig and Bagnell's, I mean, they're not winning a bunch of games, but they're playing really well. They could be, you know, 500 or above right now too. So even the teams that are lower, there's maybe an outlier, a couple of the bottom teams that are, you know, unfortunately for them, a little bit, you know, further away. But, man, I think like 10 through 5 any weekend or 4, you're in a dogfight.
You don't need to comment on this? Love seeing Minnesota State Mankato losing. Love it.
Yeah, I'll keep away from that one. It doesn't break my heart. I'll put that
in. The Beavs take on Southwest Minnesota State Saturday at 1 o'clock. Our pregame coverage at 12:30, part of a 5-game weekend here on the Beaver Radio Network. Brent, thank you much. Best of luck.
All right, thanks, guys.
Keep it rolling.
Keep it rolling, yes.
1 week at a time. And, yes, I could tell that Jalen Jenkins is a senior when I got that response from him. I didn't expect any different response from him, but that's what I got, and that's what I was expecting.
Maybe this is the year. I mean, Brian, we've been doing this long enough.
Don't say that.
That they've got their opportunities before, but they haven't been able to get over Duluth. They're able to get over Duluth this year.
Yes.
But as we've pointed out, on any given Sunday, so they need to win out if they want to make it into the playoffs. It starts with Southwest State this weekend, so hopefully you can pack the check. Wear your Halloween costume, and it sounds like great weather, too. So
kids get in free.
Yes, it'll be fun.
Women's hockey this weekend hosts the Gophers.
That's going to be a battle.
Oh, there
Number
you go.
Three. Number three.
So you want to be in Division I hockey.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
Absolutely. And the Beavs are coming off of a big weekend. They took down a team that was receiving votes in the popularity contest. Clarkson, Hannah Hoganson, a sophomore goaltender, came in and played two solid games, got her first career win on Saturday, and we tied them on Friday night, so it was a fun weekend of hockey. I hope they are planning on taking that momentum into this weekend.
So the women play in the afternoon at 3 on Friday, 2 on Saturday, and the men host Bowling Green. And the football team is home. The volleyball team is home.
Home on Saturday?
Yeah.
On Saturday. So
they got their
first
win of the year last Saturday.
Well, it was a historic Saturday. I mean, I don't remember a Saturday like it last week, seeing all those results.
Well,
and it was
whole,
all positive and for the Beavs.
The whole weekend. Soccer
yeah, it was awesome.
Swept
yeah.
Friday,
Ryan,
Sunday.
Ryan Prigge, the cross-country team, was named the senior of the year at the NSIC cross-country meet in Wayne, Nebraska.
Everybody getting in on the action.
Yeah.
I mean, it does not get any better than
hopefully
what it was last
Hopefully they can keep
Saturday.
It rolling, and now they're all at home, so folks can have a chance to come out and actually see it, and hopefully we'll have a repeat come Saturday.
Oh, I hope so.
I would love that.
Especially over the Gophers.
And again, absolutely love it when I'm seeing Minnesota State losing in football.
They're not even in the poll discussion.
No.
No.
I like that.
Love it. Thanks to Coach Saratori. Thanks to Coach Bolte for joining us. We gave away a gaggle of tickets and gift cards tonight. It's what we do here on the Beaver Radio Network and the Tom Saratori Show with the Coach's Huddle. We will be back next Wednesday night.
Absolutely.
Men's hockey is off next weekend.
Women's hockey will head to Wisconsin next weekend, taking on the number one Badgers.
As always, get more info at BeaverRadioNetwork.com. We are at the Tavern on South Shore every Wednesday night at 6 right here on the Beaver Radio Network.
Go Beavers!
WMIS-FM, The River, 92.1, Black Dog Bemidji.
I still can't even hardly believe my ears when you even tell me this.
Translator K237FJ, 95.3, Thief River Falls, and W300BP, 107.9, Grand Rapids.
Now this I love.
Northern Minnesota's rock station.